Translation. After this incident, the Lord blessed Haridas Thakur and vanquished the offence of his mother at the home of Advaita Acharya. Purport. On the Maha Prakash Day, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced Haridas Thakur and informed him that he was none other than an incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj. When Vishwarupa took sannyas, Sachimata thought that Advaita Acharya had persuaded him to do so. Therefore she accused him of this, which was an offence at Advaita Acharya's lotus feet. Later Lord Chaitanya induced his mother to take the dust of Advaita Acharya's lotus feet, and thus her Vaishnava aparad was nullified. Om Iganti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitam Scha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Rishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpata Rubiyascha Kripa Sindhu Bayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadha Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Hare. So this 17th chapter is a summary of Lord Chaitanya's youthful pastimes. In later detail, they'll be dealt with in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita. So first we can, there's two points here. One is how Sachimata, the mother of Lord Chaitanya, committed some offence at the lotus feet of Advaita Acharya. Another point here is that Lord Chaitanya showered his blessings on Haridas Thakur. Yes, so Vaishnava Parad, I mean, this last time I was here we dealt with this. It's like an ongoing subject, so it seems like a pretty important subject if it keeps being mentioned, but we'll deal with it a little bit in this particular talk. Prevention's better than cure, everybody knows that. You know, you get a disease, like just lately we've had flu in the ashram, you know, some of it for 3 months. And but you know, if you take the proper medicine at the right time, you don't get it. I don't know about flu, but heavy colds anyway. In India, they've got one prevention. It's some concoction. As soon as you start getting a runny nose or sneezing, you spray it up your nose, and that's it, finished. So now they've got, what is it? I forget what firm it is. Anyway, they've got a Western equivalent. It's, you know, it's chemical, but it works. You go into Boots. Boots is cheaper than the supermarket, actually. You go into Boots and you get this. It's a squirt. It's like a pointed piece, and you press it, and it squirts out this liquid, and you stick it up your nose and give it a few squirts, and actually you don't get cold. You're starting to sweat, and there's so many things, but then it goes away. And if it's first time it doesn't work, then you take some more. And up to 36 hours, this is not an advertisement, but the longer you leave it, then after some time you can't actually, you have to go through the cold, you have to get the symptoms, you have to get the results of not dealing with it. So it's the same with Vaishnava Aparad. If we don't deal with it in the very beginning, then it just escalates and it can become out of hand. And that's not good for a Vaishnav. It's not recommended at all. So, Vaishnava Aparad, it starts in the mind. There's no offences in the Kali Yuga for offences in the mind. But, if you leave something in the mind, what'll happen? Will it go away? It'll just like, whoop, 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 it'll go big. And eventually, you leave the mind to attach itself to anything, and it just like really makes a mountain out of a molehill. And so this is where we have to deal with the mind. This is this whole process of yoga is to control the mind. If we do that once, it's like the root. We get to the root of the problem. Let me get in there. We get down to the root, and then everything else is solved. Is that right? If you start snipping at the leaves, it's still going to be there. We're not going to solve it. So I thought we'd deal just a little bit about the mind. I mean, the mind is like an unchaste wife. If you've got a wife who's unchaste, you've got a big problem. And, it says that because in the Vedic custom, you can't, I mean, it's the same for a husband as well, don't worry. In the Vedic custom, you're not allowed to divorce. Now, nowadays, if you've got a wife who's running off, then you say, all right, fair enough. And then you just go and you get somebody else, don't you? That's the standard. But in the Vedic custom, one man, one wife. You had to stick with a situation, and you had to see, this is my karma, I have to deal with it. Otherwise, society, everybody's here, there, and everywhere. At least it's the best of a bad bargain. And so what does a person have to do? What does a man have to do, the husband? Is he attentive? He's very careful that, she's not left alone, or that, there's some precaution, so she's not going with a paramour. And if he doesn't do that, then eventually, there's some extramarital relationships, and then there's, maybe even, let's get rid of this husband. This sometimes happens. The eternal triangle, we've heard of that, haven't we? The eternal triangle. And so what happens is that, the husband is actually murdered or something like that. All because the husband didn't keep control of his unchaste wife. So the mind's like that. If we don't control this mind, then it's going to cause so many problems. Or another example, what about the tiger? Have we got any tiger hunters in here? If you capture a tiger, what do you do? After a while you get used to it. It's a tiger. What's the problem? I've had it for like last 3 or 4 years. I mean, it should be all right now. So you start to, you don't be so careful. Then what happens? When you're looking, the tiger, finished. So, we all know we should all know anyway, even if we're not, we should all know what the cure is. The cure is Mamchayo Aviabitrena Bhakti Yoga Na Sevate Sagunan Samatityetam Brahma Bhoya Kalpate. That if we engage in constant devotional service and we don't let the mind go, then very easily we come to the Brahman platform. We're no longer in the material world. The mind is actually fixed in Brahman. Devotional service is Brahman. And what's the one of the symptoms of Brahman? One of the symptoms is just peace. You know, we're not influenced by the modes of nature. We're not focusing on the modes of nature. We're focusing on devotional service. So devotional service has to be unmotivated and uninterrupted to completely satisfy the self. And so that means that, you know, it's not meant for satisfying us. You know, that's what we may think, that I'm feeling really satisfied in this service. And then we may have to change. We may see this is not actually the thing. But actually, a devotee has to come to the point where this lifetime is not for enjoying, not directly through sense gratification. That's the first thing we have to understand. It's really meant for, let's get out of this place. Just let's get out. And whatever it takes to get out, we'll do. And so a devotee has the outlook that whatever I'm faced with in devotional service, this is Krishna's mercy. Let me deal with it. Let me deal with it in devotional service. Hot and cold, what else is there? Heat and summer and winter. Good, bad, man, woman, this, that, the other. This is all actually material. A devotee is only focused on devotional service. And then peace. What's the peace formula? These are simple examples. Peace formula is Bhaktaram Yogitapasam. Sarvaloka Maheshram, Suridam Sarvabhutanam, Gatpa Man, Shantim Richati. So there's three items in this particular verse. One is Suridam Sarvabhutanam. Krishna is the well-wishing friend of all living entities. If we can actually understand that, then we can actually be peaceful. But we may not be able to understand that straight away in devotional service. So there's two other angers. What's the other two? Is the enjoyer of all our activities. You know, this is not necessarily enlivening. But anyway, he's the enjoyer of all activities. It's just stressing that Krishna is the enjoyer. We should give Krishna enjoyment. But the last one is actually very important, is that Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. That he's in control. He's in control of every single thing. And so if a devotee can come to that realization, that in this life, in this particular endeavor to perform devotional service, that Krishna's in control. He's in control of what? The three modes of material nature. And when we engage in service, he takes care of the three modes of material nature. There's a nice... Is it Bhagavad Gita here? You have one? No? In the fifth chapter, text 13 to 16, it explains this process very nicely about the misidentification of the living entity. No, it's all right. Here we are. When the embodied living being controls his nature and mentally renounces all actions, he resides happily in the city of the nine gates, the material body, neither working nor causing work to be done. So this is the point, is we have to control our nature, control the mind. The mind is the root problem. And how do we control the mind? Maha Mantra. And so this is actually the surrender of devotional service. We hear this word surrender. You have to surrender. It's not so prominent as it used to be. It were every other word. But now, you know, devotees won't accept that. You know, wait a minute. What do I have to surrender to? I've been a little bit more thoughtful. But surrender. What's the first surrender? It's the only real surrender is japa. If we get that surrender correct, then everything else will be okay, relatively speaking. Because just think about it, you know, everything else is coming from that. You know, there's a rich man, he's got so much wealth and so many facilities he can provide, but nobody asks him. so he doesn't provide. Maybe he doesn't want. A devotee, you know, when we're chanting japa, we're asking to be engaged completely in devotional service and protected. So to the degree that a devotee can actually absorb himself in that mood of hearing the holy name, even if we're not aware of the philosophy, if we hear very nicely the Maha Mantra, then all of a sudden the mind will become completely pacified. And what's the result of a pacified mind? Where do aparads come from? Where do aparads come from? Eh? From the mind, but there's a certain one of the qualities of the mind when it's not satisfied. Dissatisfaction, isn't it? If we're not satisfied, then there'll be envy. This is the choice we have in the spiritual world. We can either be satisfied with the service of Krishna, or we can try and find satisfaction somewhere else. And when we, you know, Krishna gives us that free will. If we decide not to be satisfied with that situation for some reason, Prabhupada said, don't worry about it. Somehow we made this wrong decision. But, you know, so satisfaction. And satisfaction of the mind comes from the Maha Mantra. When we're actually satisfied in devotional service, you know, we're not bothered about anything else, are we? You know, a devotee like, you know, the six Goswamis, they hardly had enough to eat, but they were satisfied. Raghunath Das Goswami, he had so much opulence, it's unbelievable. Far more opulent than people nowadays. But he tried to run away. He wanted to be with Lord Chaitanya. I'm sure everybody in this room has had that experience, either to a lesser or greater degree in devotional service, that, you know, if we really absorb it, some days it's like just completely blissful and, you know, everything just falls into place. And if we really analyse why that happens, is that maybe we put a little bit more attention into us japa. You know, there's more comes out of the bead bag than his hand. I remember there's one devotee, I call him Dr. Fakir Mohan. Now, he was initiated Vaishnava. He was a disciple of Gaur Govinda Swami. He was a friend of Gaur Govinda Swami. He's a disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, is he? I didn't know that. Eh, maybe. Yeah? Dr. Fakir Mohan. Oh. Yeah. He used to come here and give class. And I once picked him up from his flat in Boreham Wood he was staying. And he's so humble. It's unbelievable. And he used to give class. And, you know, every time he came, he never ventured from giving class on the holy name. And when he gave class, everybody were like that. And then they started reaching for the bead bags. You know, because he was so convinced. Naam Prabhu, he was saying. And, you know, it's also stuck with me that every time I feel that things are not going right in devotional service, I just think about, you know, Dr. Fakir Mohan's complete dependence on the holy name. Then we overcome the modes of nature. And even in this life, we experience spiritual life. Iha yasya hare dasye kamana manasagira nikilash bhavasta su jivan mukta sujite. Jivan mukta means liberated. This is what it means to be liberated in devotional service. The simple process is given by Prabhupada. He says that anybody who chants 16 rounds of the Maha Mantra and follows four regulative principles and obviously engages in devotional service, they're considered liberated. It's a liberated platform. How is that? You know, we don't feel liberated. Maybe we're not doing it properly, that's all. Prabhupada's on about, if you absorb yourself in these things, then we're not in the material world. We're actually spiritual world. So, then there's no envy. You know, aparads come from thinking that somebody's got something better than us. And we don't like it. And therefore, you know, or even in subtle ways, we might not think, well, that wasn't the case. This is the real reason behind it, is that somebody has got something better than us. But if we've got the best, if we've got, you know, a Krishna conscious mind, if we're completely satisfied, there's no envy. There's no apparads. So this is the real cure. We have to know the philosophy, of course, that, you know, it's like bite the bullet philosophy. It means that even though we don't want to do it because we know we're trying to, you know, we don't commit apparads because we went for a higher cause, or we try not to. But sooner or later, unless the mind's controlled, it'll come. And so, you know, this is the real panacea. So yeah, this is a surrender. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. I think everybody can relate to that, can't they, with japa? It's like it's such a simple thing to do, theoretically, but it's such a difficult thing to do, practically. And so this is why we have the process of devotional service. You know, it's like a barometer. Our japa is a barometer of the day. We chant our japa in a certain way, then the day will see that it'll go a certain way. There'll be certain things which come. Why? This is actually to remind us that, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. You know, why is it, you know, last year or a few years ago, I could do things, and now it's difficult. Why is it this, you know, it's because of this. This is my experience. That, you know, so as they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. As we control the mind, Krishna rewards us accordingly. You know, there's another way of looking at it. We've heard this example of the mad elephant offence. If we can't control this tendency to criticise, then there'll be some reaction. And actually, you may have heard this story about... Has anybody seen a mad elephant? Yeah? And lived. In India, if there's a mad elephant, you know, they just cordon the whole area off. There's nothing they can do. You can imagine, like, I don't know, what does an elephant weigh? About 4 or 5 tons. You know, 4 or 5 tons running about. You know, you're not going to stop that. And what they do, they don't even let vehicles go into the area. If a vehicle strays into the area where the mad elephant is and the elephant sees it, you know, that piece of tin around you is not going to protect you. The elephant just like, doosh! And then if there's anything left inside, it pokes its tusks in and tries to finish everything off that way. It just becomes completely berserk. So, you know, there was a story of, there was two brahmacharis. It was in India somewhere. I'm not sure where it was. But they were on a morning walk chanting the japa. And they turned this corner and there it was. An elephant. You know, can anybody make that noise? You know, making a noise through its trunk. And they saw it and immediately they turned and they started to run. And they were running, but is an elephant fast? He's faster than a man anyway. And so they were running and running and they were looking over the shoulder. First it were 100 yards away. And then they looked over after a few seconds, 75 yards. It looked like 50 yards. And they were like, you know. And so they looked around and one of them, suddenly, deja vu. He remembered something a wise old person told him. He told him what to do if you ever see a mad elephant. And it came to his mind at that time. And he says, this way. And so they both turned and they started running. And after some time, 25 yards away, after some time they came to this slope. And so they both started running down this slope. Some of them fell over, were rolling down it, getting up again, running, you know, bumping into trees. And this slope was quite a long slope and quite steep. And eventually they got to the bottom and they looked round, and guess what they saw? The elephant was at the top of the hill and it couldn't get down. You know, it must be the mass of the elephant. If it starts after a certain slope, it just starts going head over heels and, you know, kills itself. So it was tentatively trying to, but it couldn't do it. You know, so even if we are not intelligent enough to chant as Japanisely, the next one is we should, you know, follow this process of practicing Trinada Peace and Ichena, Tarada Peace Hishanai. Just like they went downhill, you know, we have to be going down obeisances. You know, if we commit Vaishnava Aparad, there's three ways we can deal with it. One is that we offer our respects and ask for apologies. But sometimes, you know, if somebody's really hurt and we've really done the dirty on somebody, I mean, it does happen, doesn't it? They're going to say, okay, with a smile on their face, but inside they're going to be really... And so we're going to feel that. And so sometimes that may happen. So then it tells us that we should serve that devotee. You know, that softens a lot of hearts when somebody comes up and they actually serve you. You offer your service. You think, you know, it really loosens things up. But there still might be a little bit there. And so then we come back to the same thing we should have done in the first place. We have to chant japa. He says we should incessantly chant japa, or as much as possible. Because eventually by chanting in the proper consciousness for a long period of time, we'll eventually get relief. So it comes back to the same thing, doesn't it? It's all down to our chanting. So that's one particular topic in this purport. Next one is Haridas Thakur. He said he got the blessings of Lord Chaitanya. You know, everybody's getting blessings. There's blessing. This material world, you know, some people come up and say, give me a blessing. You know, it's full of blessings, this material world. Everywhere we go, we're getting blessed. Everything we do is a blessing. Whatever happens, it's a blessing. Is it? Is that right? Because, you know, sooner or later we realize, I can't enjoy. That's the biggest blessing. Coming to the realization, I can't enjoy. This material world is not meant for enjoyment. So it's all blessings. So a Christian's working through the material energy in that way. And then we can think, there's only one alternative, and that's devotional service. To really absorb ourselves in it. I went to a funeral on Thursday. And I was going to come down earlier, but then what it was actually, in January, I got a letter from a devotee who used to be in Manchester. And when I opened it, he was apologising. You know, I'd been associating with him in Manchester maybe 25, 30 years ago. And he was in the temple for about 6 or 7 years. And he was explaining how he apologising for any offences that he had committed and all these things. And he said, I know the process of devotional service. He admitted that I knew the process, but he wasn't really following it properly. And at the end, I was looking for the address. He didn't put a return address. So I thought, oh, I'll write back. And then I rang somebody who he was contacting up to a couple of years ago, and he said, I think they were moving. So at that I thought, he's probably moved by now, so I didn't write. But anyway, a few days later, or a few weeks later, it was bothering me, this, you know, maybe I should write, maybe I should. And about 2 weeks later, I got a Facebook message from one devotee saying that this devotee was missing. It's in Manchester. And so, you know, then I was in Manchester at that time, And then the police came and they were concerned and they were doing, he'd last been seen at a certain place. And then, you know, 1 week went by, 2 weeks went by, 3 weeks went by. And then all of a sudden, one of his friends was on a run on the moors near Oldham, it was, and he was with a friend and they were running and she dropped back, so he turned around to, you know, encourage her, and then he saw this body. And he knew, actually, he knew it was. You know, he'd gone off his beaten track where he used to run, to run in this different... So he knew that something had guided him there. And immediately he knew. And it was actually this devotee. Mind. This is the mind. The mind is so powerful. Even though we've got everything to cure all those problems, if we don't conquer this mind, it'll take us to the most difficult situations. Can you imagine? So, anyway, I wasn't going to speak about that, but this is... So I went to the funeral on Thursday, and we saw this devotee off. Of course, you know, devotional service has been performed, Krishna will see the service. But it means at some point we have to roll our sleeves up and do what we should have done previously. It's not that, you know, it's not that we can go past anything in devotional service. Like, if we know somebody in the material world, we can go to that person and say, you know, can you, you know, and he'll help us to get round a certain obstacle. He can find us a job because he's in a certain, you know, this happens in the material world, doesn't it? It's who you know. But in devotional service, you have to do the needful. It's also who you know. If we actually start to understand Krishna and how to actually serve him nicely, then he'll... Prabhupada said once, he says, we have to be 100% pure to go back to Godhead. All the devotees. Then he saw everybody, he says, anyway, 75%. And then he got up off the Vyasasana and he started to walk out. He threw his chudra over his shoulders. He looked back and said, anyway, I've got the backdoor key to Vaikuntha. So the same thing is there, that, you know, if we know someone in the material world, we can get, you know, around things. If we actually know Krishna well enough, we can get around things. This is the process of devotional. So usually we have to go through so much toil, so much austerity, so much abnegation, and it's all on us. We have to do it. I'm going to do it. But that devotee who can just, wait a minute, I can't do it. I've got to make the effort, but I can't do it. And that's when we can start to chant japa. I'm depending on Krishna. This is the whole, you know, Krishna wants to see that real desire to go back to Godhead, and it's coming through the bead bag. So we have that contact who can take us round every day, every minute of every day. We just saw in a kirtan now, you know, how is it that everybody, you know, a few hours later, or, you know, just as we got up this morning, we didn't exactly feel like that, did we? You know what I mean? And even in the beginning of a kirtan, sometimes it's like tap, 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 you know. First of all, there's no movement. Then, you know, the knee starts going a little bit. Then we start tapping a little bit. Then, you know, we start to become a little bit motivated. And then we start listening more. And then what happens, we start to become animated. And then, you know, somebody will drag out and we're in the kirtan. We get, you know, a devotee who's fired up, you know, brings us in, and we get that little bit of lift from that touch. That's what it's supposed to be like all the time. You know, Vrakishvar Prandit, he chanted for and danced for 3 days on the trot. You know, when Prabhupada was at Rathyatra, he was in his early 70s. You know, it's not a time to be... It's not usually a time when people are chanting and dancing, you know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's all on to, you know, just get about for a lot of people at that age. But, you know, Prabhupada started dancing. He was dancing for a long time and devotees were getting frightened, you know. He's 70-odd years old. So, yeah, we're not the body. It takes us beyond the body. this hearing process. If we're not good at philosophy, all right, don't worry. If we're not good at, you know, anything else in devotional service, don't worry. But as long as we can hear the Maha Mantra, then we've got everything. Prabhupada said we can chant at our leisure. The simple process of hearing and chant. We can chant at our leisure. In any situation, whether we're outside the temple, inside the temple. And if we're a little bit literate, Prabhupada says, we can listen to philosophy. So which is more important? You know, we listen to philosophy just to convince us we should chant Hare Krishna, actually. But, you know, the same way, if we can keep chanting, even if we're not actually very attached to philosophy or other aspects of devotion, if we keep hearing and chanting, then we'll realize, actually, this is the philosophy of life, like Maharaj was saying yesterday. This is actually what Lord Chaitanya does. In the spiritual world, you know, you never. I don't know whether you do, actually. Does anybody sit down reading books about philosophy in the spiritual world? Maybe, I don't know. Usually, you know, they're actually performing so many. They're playing, aren't they? Krita punya punya, due to pious activities. You know, people, you know, mundane consciousness cannot understand the spiritual world. You know, the mundane person thinks that Krishna's an ordinary person. A jnani thinks that he's the supreme personality of Godhead. What else is there? A yogi thinks something else. They're all thinking something round the subject matter. But he says they don't realize and they can't understand that these coward boys, he's talking about the coward boys playing with Krishna, they're playing with Krishna just like an ordinary boy. And they don't know he's Krishna. And they're enjoying life. Why Krita Punya Punya? Because of heaps and heaps of pious activities. Has anybody got heaps and heaps of pious activities? Put your hand up. Nobody. I don't know about that, actually. To perform in devotional service, in one respect, there's a lot of pious activity. But, you know, just by hearing the holy name regularly, so much piety. and we've gone back on the subject matter again, actually. I was going to talk about blessings in the material world. And we flipped back to the holy name, didn't we? But I know one devotee, do you think... I want you to judge whether this is a blessing or not, right? He went to Mira Road Hospital to have some work on his sinuses. And so, they, you know, what they do, they stick a needle in your arm and next thing you know, you're waking up and you're in the recovery ward. But he didn't come with him. You know, all his body was completely zonked. He couldn't move an eyelid. He couldn't do anything, but for some reason, this effect of this anesthetic, he could hear everything, everything that was happening, and he could feel everything. He said, so they started sticking this scalpel up his nose, and can you imagine, you can't do anything, and somebody's scraping up the inside of your nose, and the pain's intolerable. And so when he came out of the anesthetic, you know, obviously it was a big relief, and he told one senior devotee about this, and he expected a little bit of sympathy. And this devotee said, "Nectar, Prabhu." Nectar. It's frightening, isn't it? The material world's a frightening place. Yes, so three types of... what's the three types of blessings? I can remember two of them. One is by, you know, by the glances of the Lord. Side road. Even a pure devotee has got the Shakti of Krishna, depending on his purity. He can also give blessings by that. What else is there? By the touch. By the touch of a devotee. He can, you know, when we embrace, we get blessings. What's the other one? Well wishes. When somebody really wants to wish us well, we get, you know, when Krishna's a well wisher, and he's given us everything we need, but maybe we can't utilize everything properly. So this is why association of devotees is so important. That even though we can't see Krishna very well, we can't appreciate Krishna very well, we can actually see and we can hear and we can touch and we can reciprocate with devotees. And so if we actually please devotees, they're so kind of think, you know, I really like this devotee. I hope he really does well in devotional service. That'll naturally come. And, you know, this is a quick way to make advancement in devotional service. We don't have to be a, you know, what's this so-called advanced devotee doing so much service. We just have to please devotees. So that's the other thing. Two really important things is hear the holy name nicely and try and serve and please devotees. So that way we get the blessings and we avoid offences. So we can stop there. If anybody's got any questions or any comments, we can take them now.